Hello, my name is Tamarack Garlow, and this is The Diamond Path, a weekly program based on Buddhist thought and action. Today's discussion will be on meditation. It seems to be a big word in Buddhism. It's a practice that's not done in every school. For example, the Nichiren school follows a particular chant. They feel if you can chant this one time, absolutely perfectly, with all the heart and mind you can, that you can become awakened. And in fact, over the years, obviously, people have, or they wouldn't be around anymore. But that's an exception. Most of the major Buddhist schools, meditation is, if not their primary practice, their primary practice, if not their only practice. So that being the case, what is meditation? We all think we know. We have images of young women sitting in a meditative posture with a box of total cereal in the background, and images of Buddhist monks all wrapped up sitting in meditation with incense pouring all over the place. So what is meditation and why do we do it? Some people meditate for health reasons. Even doctors are prescribing meditation now. And in this case, it's quite often looked at to be simply a method of sitting and calming. Sitting and calming works great for the blood pressure, works great for anxiety. If you can just sit, still your mind, think no thoughts, kind of drift off a little bit, that really does a lot for the old system. But in a spiritual context, it's basically mind looking at mind. I mentioned that word last week. I'll be mentioning it many weeks because that's basically what the Buddhist path is, mind looking at mind. There's some images used in Buddhism about mind looking in mind, and we'll be using a lot of images over the weeks. I call them simile and metaphor. They're familiar things which point to a Buddhist truth. But so often I'll be using it and I'll be giving you a lot of detail, especially when I get into some of the science and Buddhism and how they relate. We have to be very careful about following that train of thought too far. These are all suggestions. These are all impressionist paintings of what I'm trying to talk to you about. So in that mind, what is meditation? Well, there's a classic image of a pond. If you look into a pond that's agitated, there's all kinds of stuff going on. Rain, movement of water, fish, whatever. The pond is all stirred up. You can't see the bottom. It's not very clear. The mind is like that. We have so much going on in our mind at any given instant, it's mind-boggling. No pun intended. So the goal of meditation in this image is to still the mind enough to where the water is no longer muddied. It becomes clearer and clearer. And the better you can sit, the better you can calm, the better you can empty your mind, the clearer this pond becomes. So there's no real bad reason for meditating. You could do it for blood pressure. You could do it because your kids are driving you nuts and you just need to get away. Or you could use it as a pretty substantial tool in the development of your own mind. So first off, if you're going to meditate, how should you do it? Obviously, the first image that comes to mind is you're sitting cross-legged on a cushion. And this is the proper way to meditate, so to speak. But I, for one, cannot sit on a cushion. I use a small stool. Some people who come to our Sangha meeting can't even sit on that. They need to sit on a chair. It's all about what you find inside, not so much about what's going on outside. But there are a few rules, very, very short rules. First and foremost, the spine should be straight. Whether you're sitting in a chair, a stool, or a cushion, the spine should be straight. Why is that? Well, we know the spine is the central leader for all our nerve systems. And right along with those nerve systems go something called qi. Qi is the energy flow that's really one of the most basic things in the universe. It's qi. It's energy. a spiritual energy that flows through everything. It's what some chiropractors, all acupuncturists, and most Chinese medicine work with. It's simply the way the energy flows through the body. So it's very important to have your spine straight. This keeps the energy flowing properly and doesn't get bound up if you're bent over, if your stomach's sticking out too far, or you're slumped over. So posture. Start with posture. Sit up straight. The chin should be tucked in a little bit. Really, once again, that's just to align the spine. No other real significance. If you're sitting on a chair, it shouldn't be a lounge chair. It could be a lounge chair. There's really no rules. It's up to you. But a better posture would be sitting straight on a chair and not using the back. But once again, be comfortable. There are meditations where you can sit there and really concentrate on all the pain that's going on in your body. That's all about body meditation, aspects of what the physical form is doing when the mind is at work. But in general, if we're talking about letting that mind work, let's drop the pain and just sit comfortably. In some schools, people sit with their eyes wide open. In others, closed. In ours, it happens to be in between. We believe we keep the eyes slightly open because it's one of the senses. We shouldn't completely eliminate it. We can hear while we're sitting there. We can taste whatever's in our mouth. We can smell. We can feel. So we keep the eyes slightly open just so the photons and the light come in. Now, if you're sitting there and you're trying to concentrate, but your mind is just in a whirl, you just can't seem to settle down, then you close the shades. You close your eyes. That helps bring all the energy level down. Conversely, if you can't stay awake, and a lot of people have trouble with this, they fall asleep when they're meditating. I, for some reason, have never fallen asleep during meditation, except for at the training periods we go through where they work you 30 hours a day and you don't have much choice. So if you're starting to fall asleep, then open your eyes a little. And if you need to, open them wide. Just don't fix on anything. Just kind of go half cross-eyed. Just relax. Now, what do you do when you're sitting in meditation? We understand, we've talked about, not we, but it's talked about, that you still the mind. And in general, it is absolutely true. But it's kind of difficult when you see what's going on there to just say, okay, I'm going to still the mind. The mind is this incredibly complex thing that is reconfiguring, filing, planning, remembering, churning out so many thoughts in a given moment that when you first sit down to meditate, as I did, I used to yell at myself, shut up. I became so frustrated that there was not a glimmer of silence in there anywhere that I would get upset. Not a proper way to go. Upset just increases other things in your body like anxiety and adrenaline and all that, so that's not what you do. That's not what you do. But when you sit to meditate and you look at that mind, you need a little something else to concentrate on. So the breath is what's usually used. And we use the breath because, for one thing, it never stops, hopefully. And another, it's always with you. There are some people that meditate by looking at a little statue of Buddha or a plant, or they visualize Buddha or another deity figure, or any number of things. But for most of us, the tool is right there. It's our breath. So as we sit, we breathe, and we watch the breath. We concentrate on the breath. That's probably one of the biggest misconceptions about meditation. People think you just sit there and you do nothing. You think nothing. The goal is just to completely weed that garden that was your mind. But as my teacher Jack once told me, you can weed and you can weed and you can weed. But what do you have? If you weed everything that's growing, what you wind up with is sterile ground. So that's not really the process of eliminating every thought. We have to reduce them or we don't get anywhere. So we concentrate on the breath. We look at the breath. In some schools, and some teachers will ask a meditator after a session, well, what did you notice about your breathing today? And, you know, half the time they don't. I don't know. I'm just breathing. But with a little training, they start to recognize that sometimes they feel the breath a little higher up in the abdomen. Sometimes they feel it in the chest. Sometimes they feel the rib cage expanding a little bit. Sometimes they feel muscles in their lower abdomen. In other words, every breath, if looked at properly, could be unique. And these are, once again, these are just tools to allow you to concentrate on the breath. You're concentrating on it. And that is the true essence of meditation. It's not the no thought, it's the concentrating. It's the ability to concentrate. And it's not the concentration like you'd look at a page you're trying to understand and you're reading every word and you're, you know. Concentration in this aspect is to be able to focus on a single thought. Think of it. If you were doing something and you could focus all your mental activity on one thought, I mean, that's usually how we manage to solve problems, if it doesn't just bubble up out of the heart without even thinking about it, and then more on that later. But when you bring your consciousness full bore on a subject, that's when it's most useful. So when we say we concentrate when we meditate, first of all, we concentrate on the breathing. This allows us to focus. Focus, focus, focus. We focus on the breathing. Then a thought will come up. It's very interesting. It'll come up about anything. It could be what you did last week, what you're planning to do next week. Quite often it's like, what am I doing here? I'm not getting anything out of this. The important part of that process is when that thought comes up, name it. Recognize it. Where did that thought come from? If you were thinking about what to do tomorrow or what you did yesterday, the bottom line probably is you don't really want to be there. You'd rather be doing something else. You know what's good for you. You know you got to be here. But the mind is wandering. It would rather be doing something more exciting. So when you look at this mind that you sit down with, you've come to the chair, this chair or the stool, you sit down, you're ready to meditate, you're really feeling good. Maybe we've just had a service. Maybe you've just rung a bell or two. Maybe you've just plopped down on your cushion and shut the door. You're ready. So you sit there quietly and you say, all right, this is going to be really cool. And you look into your mind and what do you see there? Maybe it's something like this. Got to drive to Boston tomorrow. Need to get gas. Collect the things I need. Boy, I remember the last time I was in Boston. Rained like hell. Rained a lot yesterday, too. Kids' pool overflowed. Got to clean it. Have to remember to pick up the kids at school early today. I remember when I was younger, I used to walk to school. We didn't get to ride. My dad used to say it was good for me. Boy, Dad's been dead for 30 years. Oh, look at the kitty. Sound a little familiar? Try sitting for a while and not thinking of anything. And then watch what you are thinking. It's amazing. It's all over the place. So you're looking at this dialogue, this nonstop dialogue most of us are faced with. And just to give you a little faith, it's said that some of the best meditators in the world, these highly practiced lamas and stuff, can probably still their mind and concentrate on one idea for maybe as long as it takes to eat a meal. And that's it. The best minds in the world really don't get much more than 20 minutes of absolute concentration out of this. This is one of the things they used to say about Einstein, that his ability to concentrate was so supreme that he could block out all of the thoughts and visualize how a graviton might affect light, how light may go through trillions and trillions of light, or billions of light years, of space, and what it would do. It took absolute concentration to actually get to the depths of some of these thoughts. So that's kind of the thing we're heading for here. You get a mind that works that well, that can concentrate that well, and you've got quite a tool. So in our practice, we actually have two periods of meditation, and there's at least four or five other kinds of meditation. The two periods of meditation that we do every Monday, and that many Buddhist schools do, is Shikantaza and Vipassana. Now, one word happens to be Japanese, and the other happens to be Sanskrit, but Shikantaza is really just sitting. And that's the one that I was just talking about. This is where you calm the mind, concentrate on your breath. And once that happens, just start categorizing thoughts that come up and watch how the mind works. Watch how the body feels while you're doing meditation. Learn this critter that we've been living with for so long, and so many of us really don't understand that well. Second kind of meditation, the Vipassana, is called a contemplation. Vipassana actually means discerning the real. Now, this is a tool that we use pretty specifically during services. As the leader, I have to give the contemplation. And there's really about eight or nine basic contemplations based on Buddhist truths. And I say a minimal of words and allow the practitioner to use their mind to see what comes up based on the concepts that I've introduced. So the meditator will be sitting there, and I may start talking about visualize in front of you the face of your mother or some other person that you love very, very much. I don't say much more than that. So then you visualize this face, this person who you love, and you know, you start to get the warm feelings, and you can understand what true love means. You love this person. You bring all those emotions to the front. They're warm and cuddly, you see them. Then you pick another person in the contemplation, another image. Maybe you imagine a store clerk, some indifferent young girl who would rather be someplace else that just waited on you. You don't have much to think about her one way or the other. Call this a neutral person. So would you look at this neutral person and see what kinds of feelings, what kinds of emotions come up? And then we bring it around to someone who you may not like very well at all. It could be an enemy or just someone you can't get along with very well. And you visualize that face and you watch the emotions come up. You watch how the mind wraps around the image of that person. Then you start to see the process that you've gone through, and you've begun to understand the emotions and the preconceptions and the judgments that are wrapped up in looking at these three individuals. Anyway, that's one kind of contemplation. As I said, there's some basic classic contemplations, and that's one of them. Getting a little off the track here, but contemplations can also be used in a more mundane sense. I use them all the time in my creativity, and I think most of you also do it. If you're trying to construct something that's really interesting, whether it's painting and drawing, any of the art forms, landscaping, construction, and probably most especially in your own life, like, why did she leave me? Or why did she treat me that way? Or why did he run off? So often the answer is just too clouded with our own preconceptions to understand why this happened. Why did this happen? Or, I'm stuck. What do I do now? How do I make this a beautiful piece? How do I get from point A to point B in this creation? A contemplation would be where you would still the mind, a few moments of the first kind of meditation, just stilling and calming the mind. And then you ask it a question. Or you pose this creative dilemma in a very short way. Once again, words are not a real tool in the contemplations. It's all about the heart. This is big in Buddhism. The difference between the head and the heart-mind. The mind has so many conflicts going into it, so many conflicts coming out of it. The heart generally knows the right answer. That's the non-intellectual source that we tap in Vipassana meditation. We don't cloud it over with words and intellectual concepts. You start, you pose a question and then you start rambling. Well, if I did this, I did this, then it wouldn't work here because I'm, and then you're just caught up with words. That's not what a contemplation's about, both in your Buddhist practice and in the more mundane methods of contemplation. You really just ask the question, still your mind, see what comes up. And it'll usually come up in a word or two. Or sometime you'll have this overarching view that wasn't there before. It's all about avoiding the intellect. This is what I was saying earlier about the intellectual idea being fairly important in our school to introduce ideas. Every school, you can't learn what you don't know anything about. But once you learn enough of it, it's actually a process of starting to drop the intellectuality. When most of my friends and myself started Buddhism, we would read book after book after book. Tibetan monks and, you know, Vietnamese, Thich Nhat Hanh, Pema Chodron, and Shambhala. So we're just constantly reading and reading and reading. And finally, my abbot one day just told me, stop reading. I think it's one of the best things he ever told me, and he's told me a lot of important things. So you reach a point where all this intellectual stuff has got to stop and you've got to dig a little deeper. You drop the words, you go to the heart. So the Vipassana meditation is the second aspect of our daily, well, it's my daily service, but it's a weekly service that we do on Mondays. Other types of meditation that Tendai embraces and many schools embrace is walking meditation. That's an interesting meditation. It's great if you could just go outside, especially, but it doesn't have to be. And you just take one very slow step after another. One step and another. And what do you concentrate while you're walking around? Not the jet trails, not the birds. Nothing specifically. You're really there just to absorb, and there's so much more going on if you're walking outside than if you're sitting in a room somewhere. So a good meditator doesn't ignore these things. In fact, it's been proven that good meditators can meditate during all kinds of background stuff, and they tend to hear it, and in some cases, in many cases, remember it, but they're not paying attention to it. Their mind is open enough that they're absorbing this while they're concentrating on their breath. So as you walk around, it's the same process. You're not going into the future. You're not remembering the past. You're not planning your dinner. You're feeling your feet touch the ground. You're feeling the pressure come up through your sock. You're aware of every moment as you walk. And it could be a bird. I didn't mean to say you shouldn't listen to birds. If the bird is out there, that's a sound that comes in. But don't say, wow, that was a bird. Wonder if it was a robin. You just acknowledge it. That was a bird. If you have a thought about dinner, you acknowledge it. Wow, that was a thought about dinner. Then let it go. Don't hang on to it. You can have any thought you want, and you will have any thought you want and a lot that you don't. But the key is, acknowledge it was a thought and let it go. Note it and let it go. So walking meditation, as well as all the other meditations, is about being in the present. I visited Golden Gate Park in San Francisco many, many years ago. And I'm walking along this Japanese garden, and all of a sudden I'm in the middle of a stream. And, geez, I just about lost it. I'm looking around to see who was laughing at me because I was embarrassed because I was walking in the stream. And then I looked down and I realized that these were stone steps going through the stream. And that's what it was all about. as you're walking over this stream, if you're not paying attention to your walking, you're going to get wet. So much like this, when you're doing walking meditation, you know, probably won't trip as much because you're paying attention. Sometimes we go out and into the woods and there's things to trip over. Another little thing I like to do in walking meditation is you lift one leg, hold it up for a moment. Get your balance on one leg before you put it down. Then bring the other leg up, hold it long enough that you catch a balance point and put it down. You do that for a few steps, and then your mind starts to wander and you realize you've lost your balance. So that's another good practice. As you're walking meditation, try that balance point thing. That allows you to exercise that concentration that you're working on. So what's the payoff? What do you get from meditation? Some people reach a real spiritual high, and that's great. We all love to have a spiritual high, but don't expect it. You may get it once, you may never get it again. I had one deep meditation. There's levels of meditation, levels of samadhi, and I reached maybe the second level for the first and only time. It was pretty interesting, and I keep looking for it, and I haven't found it again. So in other words, it's almost like a job. It's like exercise in a way. It takes effort to sit there and do nothing. So don't expect the spiritual high. Just sit. The main thing is this gazing into one's own mind. That's the payoff. When you learn how that mind works, when you truly learn how your own mind works and understand it, then you'll truly understand how others' minds work. You also learn your habitual programming. You learn your prejudices and your habits. It's a tool for this awakening that I was talking about. The more you understand yourself, the clearer the world becomes. So when you sit in meditation, I wish you luck. You've got a subtle and difficult job understanding that thing you on top of your head there. So good luck doing it. This is the Diamond Path. We air twice a week, Sundays at 8:30 in the morning and repeated Wednesday afternoons at 1:30. And each week we'll explore some aspect of life, we'll give it a talk and see where we come out. Comments or questions or for information regarding our regular Monday night meditation service can be addressed by calling me at 413-229-3263 or through email at primrosecottage@adelphia.net. The Diamond Path can also be accessed at www.diamondpath.blogspot.com. This is a production of Higashi Sangha and the Housatonic Radio Works. Gassho, everyone.